from KQED.
This is a special edition of the California Report, the State of the State address by Governor Jerry Brown. Good morning. I'm John Myers, and we are in our studio in Sacramento, just across the way from the state capitol. In a few minutes, Governor Brown will step to the podium on the dais in the chambers of the State Assembly, and we will bring you the speech in its entirety, followed by both response from Republican legislators and, of course, political analysts. This, as we know, is the second State of the State address of Jerry Brown's third term as governor. And while State of the State speeches are often crafted by a bevy of political speechwriters, we are told Brown, as is always the case, wrote his own speech. And his staff says he is the only person who really knows what is in that speech. And Jerry Brown is a man who is unafraid, as we know, to go off script. And so we'll be waiting closely to see what he has to say today about the state of things in California and his vision for the future. As we await the beginning of the speech, I'm joined by a couple of keen observers of California politics. In our studio here is Steve Maviglio, a Democratic political strategist and former top advisor to Governor Gray Davis. And Marisa Lagos, political writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, joins us from the floor of the California State Assembly, where things are just getting underway. And Marisa, let's begin with you, if we could, while we await this speech. Safe to say that Jerry Brown has a different set of goals with this speech than the State of the State he delivered last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different time. 1 year ago, he was hoping to get Republicans on board for his tax plan. That failed. This year, he's again talking about tax hikes, but he wants to go straight to voters and sort of go around the Assembly and Senate. So I think we are all expecting to hear a lot about that, although his press office has been saying, you know, we don't know what he's going to say, but it's not a tax speech. So it should be interesting. And as you mentioned, I mean, Governor Brown does not like to rely on speechwriters. He is happy to speak off the cuff. So, you know, this could go in sort of any number of directions at this point, I think.
And as you said, of course, you know, one of his goals this year is to talk directly to the public and not so much to work the inside game of politics in the state capitol. And literally, that's going to start happening as soon as the speech is over. After the speech, as you're going to be with him, Jerry Brown hops a plane and heads south.
That's right. He's speaking to a bunch of community and elected leaders at Los Angeles City Hall. He'll be headed up to Burbank after that to talk to a group of teachers behind closed doors. And then Thursday, he's heading down to Orange County and San Diego for more meetings and speeches in front of, you know, community leaders and elected leaders and others. But, you know, the interesting thing is a lot of these groups are the ones that are probably going to be on board for his tax plan. I think his bigger challenge is really talking directly to the people of the state. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether they'll be listening this early on. The election's not till November, and we have a long way to go in the presidential race and other issues before then.
Marisa Lagos is political writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, joining us from the floor of the California State Assembly, where we see legislators of all stripes still milling about, so we're not quite at time for the speech yet. Steve Maviglio, a Democratic political strategist who's here with me in studio. And, Steve, you used to work for Governor Gray Davis. You're well aware of what it's like to do a State of the State. But it seems to me that these speeches have gotten, I guess I'd call them smaller and smaller in their scope in recent years, really kind of a sign of the ongoing crisis in the state.
Yeah, and there's actually two goals here. One, he has to speak to the people in the chamber. He has to convince them of what his agenda is going to be for the year ahead and how they should partake in that. And the other speech is, of course, to us, to talk about what he envisions the California voters to be tuned into and his road trip that he's going to kick off today to sell his November plan.
As a Democrat in this state, and Jerry Brown is the titular head of the Democratic Party here, what does he have to do to sell that message? I mean, we are in a plurality Democratic state. You would think that he would have a fairly receptive audience. But as we also know, California is not a state that terribly loves its idea of taxes.
Yeah, and you know, to his credit, the one thing this governor has focused on has been the budget, and actually to the exclusion of many other things that people would like to see. I think to Democrats, he really has to motivate them to say, okay, enough is enough with the cuts. We're actually shredding the safety net now in California. We have to have these proposals approved or we're really going to go off the cliff.
And quickly too, Steve, in the context of how State of the State speeches are, as I said at the top of this broadcast, usually you've got speechwriters, policy people crafting them, You've lived through that with a governor, and Jerry Brown is the guy in charge. He is the chief speechwriter.
Yeah, I mean, I remember with Gray Davis, we rehearsed this with empty chambers days before. Every speech was vetted inside and outside. I'm sure with Governor Schwarzenegger, it was that times 10. So this is a lot different. I mean, I was talking to one of his chief lieutenants the other day, and she said, we have absolutely no clue what he's going to talk on, but he does want to announce some big ideas, so we'll have to see what those are.
And indeed. I mean, the press corps certainly knows that we often get a copy of the speech a few minutes in advance, or more than a few minutes in advance. We're sitting here about 5 minutes after the hour. We still haven't seen the speech, and neither has anyone else across California. We've talked a little bit here as we're waiting for Governor Brown to enter the chambers in the state assembly and begin the state of the state. We've talked a little bit about what we expect in the speech in terms of the issue of taxes. The governor has a tax proposal he's trying to get on the November ballot, a $7 billion increase in income taxes for the most wealthy and sales taxes on everyone. Marisa Lagos, Chronicle reporter, as you're sitting there on the floor, fair to say that Governor Brown has got a bit of a tightrope to walk this year and maybe in the speech because he has to sell the tax increase idea, but he's got to defend things like maybe high-speed rail that are expensive. And he's also going to try to tell the public, I would assume, that California's on its way out of the hole. That's a real tough balance.
That's right. I mean, I think, you know, he doesn't want to scare people too much. He wants to strike a positive tone because that can help lead to economic growth, obviously. But he wants to make them, you know, folks see that they need his taxes as he sees it. So I think that it is a tightrope, and I think we're going to see that sort of play out throughout the entire year. Obviously, he's going to have a pretty good reception here. We have a Democratic majority in both houses of the legislature. I'm talking a little quietly because this is all beginning right now on the floor. But, you know, again, Jerry Brown loves to talk, and he has, you know, done this quite a few times over the years. So I think he will sort of talk more today in optimistic tones. I think we're going to see him talk about things like high-speed rail more than, say, the cuts in welfare that he's proposing. I don't think he wants to get up here and spend all his time defending those cuts. I think he wants to talk about the bright future of the state. And, you know, we've heard him use that rhetoric recently, talking about innovation in Silicon Valley and the vast personal wealth in the state, which exists despite the huge budget deficits of recent years.
And we see that Governor Brown has made his way into the chambers of the state assembly, made his way up toward the dais of the front, and waiting to be introduced. We've got still a few other formalities before the speech actually begins. The governor brought up, as is custom, by a bipartisan group of legislators who all applaud for now. We'll see whether they're all applauding come the speech, come the beginning of the speech here when the governor starts making a few different comments. Steve Maviglio, when I was talking to Marisa Lagos about this fine line the governor has to walk, there is this sense that that every time we talk about the economy's doing better, he's going to have to explain, but we still need the additional taxes. And that's a messaging challenge that he has.
Yeah, and Jerry Brown is a third way kind of guy. He's not a radical Democrat, and he's not a conservative Republican. He's trying to find that middle route. And I think you'll see him do that today. I don't think he's going to say this is not a choice between more taxes and cutting services. We have to find a middle way to do things better. And he said that all along, and I think we'll continue to see that.
And now being introduced in the chambers of the state assembly, Governor Brown's wife, First Lady Ann Gust Brown, who everyone says is the most important confidant of Governor Brown. Marisa Lagos, I mean, certainly you and I hear that all the time, that if there is a tight circle around the Brown administration, it's basically a circle of two sometimes. It's Jerry Brown and Ann Brown. Marisa Lagos, are you there?
Running the show here, which I think is a little bit of an overstatement. I think she has a lot of influence and pull. And I think she's more of a detail person than the governor. I think he likes to kind of think big and not necessarily get bogged down in some of the sort of nitty-gritty of this stuff. And so, yeah, we see her everywhere with him in the Capitol at press events. I think she's a very close advisor. And, of course, you know, this budget that he proposed a few weeks ago is also crafted largely by the Department of Finance. And he did keep on Arnold Schwarzenegger's last finance director on a monosonnet. So not an entirely close-off administration, I'd say. In fact, we probably hear more, as much from Ann in the press, to some extent, at least in sort of more casual settings, as we do from the governor.
And, of course, First Lady Anne Brown, we actually get a lot in the press corps of clues to what the governor's doing because she's pretty good on Twitter, and she'll upload photos of the governor and working in his office. As we await the beginning of the proceedings here again, they're introducing different dignitaries in the State Assembly chamber right now. As we begin that process, Marisa Lagos, talk just for a moment, if you could, too, about things that we're watching in terms of the reception in the speech. Because as Steve Maviglio pointed out, this isn't just a speech to the members of the legislature where you're sitting there on the assembly floor. It's to the public as well. But those legislators, what do you think they want to hear? Democrats are concerned about the cuts. Republicans, of course, hate the taxes he's pushing. What kind of reception do you think he could get?
Well, you know, I think it'll be far different from a year ago when right after his speech, the Republican sort of response was still wait and see. I don't think they're going to be as sort of open-armed in their welcome as the governor's tax plan. And we've already seen some responses leak out from both houses and the GOP. I think Democrats want to hear that this is maybe the last year of cuts. I think they want some assurances that the programs that they hold so near and dear and that they've cut repeatedly in recent years are going to see an end to that. And then I think just more generally, you know, this is a chance for those who support Jerry Brown's plan and both the business, law enforcement communities to try to spin the speech, as always happens after any remarks by the governor. But yeah, I would definitely expect a better reception from the Democrats on this floor. And I think that Republicans are not going to come out swinging until about 2 minutes after the speech.
Yeah. And we're watching here again on the floor of the State Assembly, again, the formalities that begin all of these State of the State addresses. They're running a little bit behind schedule. We were told there was about 8 minutes of introduction. That's exactly how we get it. We get what we call a tick-tock down to exactly when the speech starts. They started a little bit late, so we're expecting the governor to begin speaking soon. Steve Maviglio, as a Democratic political strategist, you know, and again, watching what Jerry Brown has to do this year, it seems to me that it's at best only slight hype, and I would actually not even say it's really much hype at all, to say that this is really probably the most pivotal year of the Brown administration, this four-year term, because if he succeeds with the voters and the taxes, lots of things become possible in year three. If he fails, it's a dramatic reshifting of not only this term, but his legacy.
Yeah, and we've been in this budget rut for years. And, you know, the backdrop against all this, it's a big election year for the president right down to all these people sitting in the chamber. So with about a dozen initiatives on the ballot, his proposals, all these people running in new offices and new districts, it's going to be quite a spectacular year for him.
And we're seeing Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom approach the podium here, and the Lieutenant Governor has the job of formally introducing Governor Jerry Brown. And, of course, once Governor Brown takes the podium, we will take you to the speech in its entirety. And again, this is a special statewide edition of the California Report. You're listening to Governor Jerry Brown's State of the State speech. Marisa Lagos with the San Francisco Chronicle, really quickly before the speech begins, one of the things you've been watching closely as a reporter is the governor's big plan for realignment of state and local services. And this is still a work in progress, is it not? And this also, too, is one of those issues where people may start to see real impacts about people in county jails instead of prisons and services being redirected. There's a lot left to do for the governor on that.
Absolutely. I mean, this law took effect October 1. It began shifting lower-level offenders to serve their sentences in local jails. And so there's a lot at stake for both counties and law enforcement in this year and what happens in Sacramento. The State Association of Counties recently agreed to pull a ballot measure they had proposed that would have guaranteed their funding for that plan. I think it's likely that they will throw their support behind the governor's tax plan, although they haven't officially committed to that. But that tax plan does guarantee funding for realignment. It's a huge issue, and it really, I think, is one of the more defining things that Jerry Brown has done since he's got here. I mean, yesterday we heard that after almost a decade, the state may be ready to actually get out of under a federal receivership governing the medical care in its prisons. That's all related to this crowding case that came down at the Supreme Court last year, which is essentially why not only Jerry Brown proposed realignment, but he was able to get it through a legislature that's been very reticent in the past to make these sorts of criminal justice reforms. So,
and I think it's fair to say this is, if I can, Marisa, it's fair to say this is really the biggest, boldest thing the governor has done while he's trying to deal with all these financial problems. This reshifting of government in California is probably the biggest thing to date.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the taxes did not go before voters last year. The cuts were sort of, I think you would talk to folks in the welfare and social services area, more of the same. So this is really something that Brown has really sort of struck his first year legacy on, and something that's, you know, going to continue rolling out over the next 3 years. So we won't really know, I think, for years what the ultimate effect is, but we're already seeing a really sharp decline in prison population and, you know, a lot of concern from the right about the public safety issues and whether these folks are going to end up getting out of local jails early. So it's an ongoing issue, and it's one that's very important.
And with that, Marisa Lagos from the San Francisco Chronicle, thank you. Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom has just introduced Governor Jerry Brown as he delivers his State of the State speech here live in Sacramento. And we take you to the chambers of the State Assembly, Governor Jerry Brown.
You have to keep her. Thank you. Fellow dignitaries and fellow citizens, as required by the state constitution, I'm reporting to you this morning on the condition of our state. Before I do, I just want to make one notation. I noticed that Connie and Mr. Huff put out their critique of my speech 24 hours ago. Now, I'll let you know a little secret. My speech wasn't finished 24 hours ago. And I do want to say, I didn't know that you were psychics and that you possessed the powers of precognition and clairvoyance. After the speech, I want to check with you on some stock tips. We could use them, especially in the state. Look, putting it as simply as I can, California is on the mend. Last year, we were looking at a structural deficit of $20 billion. It was a real mess. But you rose to the occasion, and together, we shrunk state government, reduced our borrowing costs, and transferred key functions to local government closer to the people. The result is a problem one-fourth of what we confronted last year. My goal then was to balance budget cuts with a temporary extension of existing taxes if the voters approve. You made the reductions and some very difficult decisions, but the four Republican votes needed to put the tax measure on the ballot were not there. So we're left with unfinished business, closing the remaining gap. Again, I propose cuts and temporary taxes. Neither is popular, but both must be done. In a world still reeling from the collapse of the financial system, it makes no sense to spend more than we have. The financial downgrading of the United States, as well as of several governments in Europe, should be warning enough. It is said that the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and digging ourselves into a deep financial hole to do good is a bad idea. In this time of uncertainty, prudence and paying down debt is the best policy. For my part, I'm determined to press ahead with substantial budget cuts and my tax initiative. The cuts are not ones I like, but the situation demands them. As for the initiative, it's fair, it's temporary, and it's half of what people were paying in 2010. And it will protect our schools and guarantee in the Constitution funding for the public safety programs we transferred to local government. With enough time, we can and should devise more permanent tax reform. But for now, we should finish the job of bringing spending into line with revenues. Putting our fiscal house in order is good stewardship, and it helps regain the trust of the people. It also builds confidence in California as a place to invest and to realize one's dreams. Contrary to those critics who fantasize that California is a failed state, I see unspent potential and incredible opportunity. Every decade since the 60s, dystopian journalists write stories on the impending decline of our economy, our culture, and our politics. Yes, It's fair to say that California is turbulent, less predictable, and, well, different. Yet, look at the facts. After the mortgage bubble burst in 2007, California lost 1 million jobs, much of it driven by the over-leveraged construction industry and its financial partners in the under-regulated mortgage industry. The result is a recovery far slower than after the previous six national recessions. But now we're coming back. In 2011, California personal income grew by almost $100 billion, and 230,000 jobs were created, a rate much higher than the nation as a whole. Contrary to those declinists who sing of Texas and bemoan our woes, California is still the land of dreams as well as the Dream Act. And thank you for sending me that. California is the place where Apple, Intel, Hewlett-Packard, Oracle, Qualcomm, Twitter, Facebook, and countless other creative companies all began. It's home to more Nobel laureates and venture capital investment than any other state. In 2010, California received 48% of U.S. venture capital investments, and in the first months, 3 months of last year, it rose even higher to 52%. That is more than four times greater than the next recipient, Massachusetts. As for new patents, California inventors were awarded almost four times as many as inventors from the next state, New York. California has problems, but rumors of its demise are greatly exaggerated. The year 2012 presents plenty of opportunity, and if we work together, we can stimulate jobs, build renewable energy, reduce pollution and greenhouse gases, launch the nation's only high-speed rail system, reach agreement on a plan to fix the Delta, improve our schools, reform our pensions, and make sure that prison realignment is working to protect public safety and reduce recidivism. Last year, I appointed a top advisor with an impressive record in the private sector and charged him with finding out what doesn't work for businesses in this state and how to fix it. What he heard consistently was that business needed an effective champion to navigate the state's plethora of complex laws and regulations, which can discourage investment and job creation. You enacted a law to restructure our Office of Business Development and place it in the governor's office. Under the name GoBiz, we now have a point of contact at the highest level for businesses large and small. More than that, the GoBiz office is staffed with people who understand what it's like to be in business, and they stand ready to intervene and give real help to get businesses open and projects off the ground. Already, California is leading the nation in creating jobs in renewable energy and the design and construction of more efficient buildings and new technologies. Our state keeps demanding more efficient structures, cars, machines, and electric devices. We do that because we understand that fossil fuels, particularly foreign oil, creates ever-rising costs to our economy and to our health. It's true that the renewable energy sector is small relative to the overall economy, but it pays good wages and will only grow bigger as oil prices increase and the effects of climate change become more obvious and expensive. I've set a goal of 20,000 megawatts of renewable energy by 2020. You've laid the foundation by adopting the requirement that one-third of our electricity come from renewable sources by that date. This morning, I can tell you we're on track to meet that goal and substantially exceed it. In the last 2 years alone, California has permitted over 16,000 megawatts of solar, wind, and geothermal energy projects. In the beginning of the computer industry, jobs were numbered in the thousands. Now they're in the millions. The same thing will happen with green jobs, and California is positioned perfectly to reap the economic benefits that will inevitably flow. California also leads the nation in cleaning up the air, encouraging electric vehicles, and reducing pollution and greenhouse gases. Our vehicle emission standards, which have always set the pace, now have been adopted by the federal government for the rest of the country. Under AB 32, California stepped out and crafted a bold plan to deal with climate change and foreign oil dependency. The plan will require less carbon in our fuels, more efficient technologies across a broad swath of businesses, and a carefully designed cap-and-trade system that uses market incentives instead of prescriptive mandates. As a result, California is attracting billions of dollars in clean tech venture capital investments. In 2011, almost 40% of such investments were made in California, making our state not only the leader in the nation, but in the entire world. My commitment is to continue these innovative programs and build on them in the coming year in every way I can. Now, just as bold is our plan to build a high-speed rail system connecting the northern and southern part of our state. This is not a new idea. As governor the last time, I signed legislation to study the concept. Now, 30 years later, we're within weeks of a revised business plan that will enable us to begin initial construction before the year is out. President Obama strongly supports the project and has provided the majority of funds for the first phase. It's now your decision to evaluate the plan and decide what action to take. Without hesitation, I urge your approval. If you believe that California will continue to grow as I do, and that millions more people will be living in our state, this is a wise investment. Building new runways and expanding our airports and highways is the only alternative. That is not cheaper and will face even more political opposition. Those who believe that California is in decline will naturally shrink back from such a strenuous undertaking. I understand that feeling, but I don't share it, because I know this state and the spirit of the people who chose to live here. California is still the gold mountain that Chinese immigrants in 1848 came across the Pacific to find. The wealth is different, derived as it is not from mining the Sierras, but from the creative imagination of those who invent and build and generate the ideas that drive our economy forward. Critics of the high-speed rail project abound, as they often do when something of this magnitude is proposed. During the 1930s, the Central Valley Water Project was called a fantastic dream that will not work. The master plan for the interstate highway system in 1939 was derided as New Deal jitterbug economics. In 1966, then-Mayor Johnson of Berkeley called BART a billion-dollar potential fiasco. Similarly, the Panama Canal was for years thought to be impractical. And Benjamin Disraeli himself said of the Suez Canal, totally impossible. Well, the critics were wrong then, and they're wrong now. And we're going to build the first phase so that in of itself is worth the $2 billion of state money that we're going to invest. Nothing else happened, and it will. Another issue we must tackle is water. Last week, Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar met here in Sacramento with those in my administration who are working to complete the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. Together, we agreed that by this summer, we should have the basic elements of the project we need to build. This is something my father worked on, and then I worked on as well, decades ago. We know more now and are committed to the dual goals of restoring the Delta ecosystem and ensuring a reliable water supply. This is an enormous project. It will ensure water for 25 million Californians and for millions of acres of farmland, as well as 100,000 acres of new habitat for spawning fish and other wildlife. To get it done will require time, political will, and countless permits from state and federal agencies. I invite your collaboration and constructive engagement. Next, I want to say something about our schools. They consume more tax, dollars than any other government activity, and rightly so, as they have a profound effect on our future. Since everyone goes to school, everyone thinks they know something about education. And in a sense, they do. But that doesn't stop experts and academics and foundation consultants from offering their ideas, usually labeled reform and regularly changing at 10-year intervals, on how to get kids learning more and better. It's salutary and even edifying that so much interest is shown in the next generation. Nevertheless, in a state with 6 million students, 300,000 teachers, deep economic divisions, and 100 different languages, some humility is called for. In that spirit, I offer these thoughts. First, responsibility must be clearly delineated between the various levels of power that have a stake in our educational system. What most needs to be avoided is concentrating more and more decision-making at the federal or state level. For better or worse, we depend on elected school boards and the principals and teachers they hire. To me, we should set broad goals and have a good accountability system, leaving the real work to those closest to the students. Yes, we should demand continuous improvement in meeting our state standards, but we should not impose excessive or detailed mandates. My budget proposes to replace categorical programs with a new weighted student formula that provides a basic level of funding with additional money for disadvantaged students and those struggling to learn English. This will give more authority to local school districts to fashion the kind of programs they see their students need. It will also create transparency, reduce bureaucracy, and simplify complex funding streams. Given the cutbacks to education in recent years, it's imperative that California devote more tax dollars to this most basic of public services. If we're successful in passing the temporary taxes that I've proposed and the economy continues to expand, schools will be in a much stronger position. No system, however, works without accountability. In California, we have detailed state standards and lots of tests. Unfortunately, the resulting data is not provided until after the school is over. Even today, as I speak to you, the ranking of schools based on tests taken in April and May of 2011 is not available. I believe it's time to reduce the number of tests and get the results to teachers, principals, and superintendents in weeks, not months. With timely data, principals and superintendents can better mentor and guide teachers as well as make sound evaluations of their performance. I believe we also need a qualitative system of assessments, such as a site visitation program where each classroom is visited, observed, and evaluated. I will work with the State Board of Education to develop this proposal. The House of Education is divided by powerful forces and strong emotions. My role as governor is not to choose sides, but to listen, to engage, and to lead. I'll do that. I embrace both reform and tradition, but not complacency. My hunch is that principals and teachers know the most, but I'll take good ideas from wherever they come. As for pensions, I put forth my 12-point proposal. Examine it, improve it, but please, take up the issue and do something real. I'm committed to pension reform because I believe there's a real problem. Three times as many people as are retiring as are entering the workforce. This arithmetic doesn't add up. In addition, benefits, contributions, and the age of retirement all have to balance. I don't believe they do today. Start tomorrow. You work for 30 years, Are you going to live to 80, 90, 110? How much is that? How many people are retired? How many people are working? How many people are coming along? How does it all work out? Anybody tells me that you feel absolutely confident that 40 or 50 years from now, things are all going to be paid for, are not looking at the numbers and the other comparable investments. As for prison alignment, we are just at the beginning. The cooperation of sheriffs, police chiefs, probation officers, district attorneys, and local officials have been remarkable. But we have much to do to protect public safety and reduce recidivism, and together we'll get it done. It's one thing to pass a law, and it's quite another to implement and make it work. As I see it, that's my job as governor and as chief executive. Make the operations of government work efficiently, honestly, in the people's interest. With your help, that's what we'll do in 2012 and prove once again that the declinists about California are wrong. We're on the move. We're on the mend. Let's get it done. Thank you.
Governor Jerry Brown delivering his State of the State of speech from the State Assembly Chambers in Sacramento. You're listening to the State of the State, a special broadcast from the California Report. I'm John Myers in our studios in Sacramento, and of course, Governor Brown's speech running just around a half hour here, touching on a number of different points, at times lofty and at times very detailed and precise. Some might even call it slightly wonkish a little bit, and getting to some of the nitty-gritty of how government works and his goals for California in the coming year. I am joined by, as we look here at the speech and kind of what to make of it, by a number of folks. First off, Steve Maviglio, a Democratic political strategist and former press secretary to Governor Gray Davis, who's been involved in these kind of speeches before, is someone working in the executive branch. Steve, your overall thoughts what the governor did here? He tried to hit a number of different things in the speech.
I think he hit the tightrope as we suspected he would, trying to balance the good with the bad. He talked big in terms of projects, clean energy, high-speed rail, and water. He also focused on what was his entire theme last time, and that was the budget.
In a moment here, we are going to be speaking to Republicans in the state legislature to get some sense of response from their perspective of this. As we watched this speech here in our studio, not to be surprising here, that we saw applause in lots of lines from Democratic legislators, not so much applause from Republicans in some areas. He did, however, though, I think, hit some things that, Steve, that Democrats need to still wrestle with here, that he's imploring them to work on. And one in particular, one that you've worked on a lot, and you have a lot of folks who feel passionate about the issue, which is public employee pensions. The governor seemed to open the door to say, my plan may not be the only one we have to do, but do something substantive is what he said. And that's still a tough row to hoe.
Yeah, it's a heavy lift, and it's a very complex problem, and this legislature is not used to dealing with complex problems. You know, there is a threat of a ballot initiative, however, so maybe that will be the motivation to make some real reforms to stop some of the abuses we're hearing about. But it is only 3% of the state budget, so he's got a lot bigger things on his plate to deal with than that.
It does seem, though, too, that when we look at the speech, stepping back macro for just a moment before we start digging down into some of the details, that this was a quintessential Jerry Brown speech. This is very different than what an Arnold Schwarzenegger would have delivered, very different than what Gray Davis would have delivered. As I said, at times lofty and at times wonkish. I mean, he really rattled off lots of things, dystopian journalists. I mean, you name it, it was a Jerry Brown speech.
Yeah, you always need a dictionary handy when Jerry Brown gives a speech.
Let's check in as we're waiting, talking to some Republican legislators from the floor of the state legislature. I want to talk a little bit about the issue of education, and I'm joined by a couple of guests who can talk about that. First of all, in studio, Joshua Peschdault is the president of the California Federation of Teachers. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
And also joining us from our studios in San Francisco is Anna Tentakulis, our education reporter for the California Report. And Anna, let me begin with you really quickly, if I could. The governor laid out some things that he's been talking about on the issue of education already in terms of funding and the fewer rules of categoricals, as we call them, from Sacramento. But he also talked about a few new things, maybe less testing or certainly faster test results to help schools get to what they need to do to help teach kids. How do you think that's going to be received?
Well, I think teachers will be very happy about that. And I think parents are going to be really happy about that. I think over the past few years, you've heard a lot of worry and just a lot of frustration in schools that testing has become the focus of the school day. And so this was certainly something that I think will catch a lot of people off guard, you know, in classrooms and in school communities. And really, I think it's the first time that we kind of hear Governor Jerry Brown take a stand on something in education. I mean, he certainly has talked about freeing up money in Sacramento and providing that money to school districts so they can use it based on what they think is most important. But when it comes to such a kind of controversial issue such as state standardized testing and his belief that there should be less of it, that's that was quite a statement.
Joshua Peschtolt, president of the California Federation of Teachers, you're a high school teacher.
Yes.
And when you hear the governor say things like, let's leave the real work closest to those who are closest to the students, got to be something you would agree with.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been a high school teacher for more than 20 years. I'm also a parent of a 12-year-old seventh grader, so I've seen this both as a teacher and as a parent. It's clear the governor has been listening to teachers and administrators and parents and the thoughtful education experts. Because this really reflects, I think, a significant shift in the approach of the state. And it's also a way of shifting what has been going on for a number of years, which has been, as far as I can see, the scapegoating of teachers and the scapegoating of parents for the crisis of public education. And so I think this is a very healthy development. I think there are aspects of this State of the State speech that will be supported throughout the education community.
But, you know,
go ahead, Anna,
that
please.
Said, I mean, yes, ending more testing, many might see that as a good thing, but it's a very complicated issue. And, you know, it's just kind of opening up a Pandora's box. It's not something simple. And obviously, the governor didn't give us a lot of details on that. You're going to have a lot of federal and state officials not happy with that. So there's a lot of questions to be answered here.
And I do want to say just on that issue, Steve Maviglio, as a Democratic strategist, but someone who's worked for a governor, when you start talking about something as complex as education reform, putting that on the table in the same year you're dealing with a big budget deficit, a tax campaign that you're trying to run, defending high-speed rail and on, that's a lot on your plate, even for a governor who has tried to say, I'm not going to do too much.
Yeah, and I mean, this governor in particular, he's really gone micro with his staff, with his strategy, with his legislative work. He has not been a big picture kind of guy. He's been focused just on the budget. So in that way, this speech was really a lot more expansive than what he's done in his first year.
I want to pivot to the issue of education, but more precisely education funding and one way to pay for education and the idea of new taxes. Joshua Peschtolt with the California Federation of Teachers, your organization, has an initiative that could hit the streets here in a matter of weeks that would institute a new millionaire's tax, would raise the tax on people who make the most in California to pay for schools. The governor in his speech today, I'm using a little bit of license here to get to my point, says the House of Education is divided by powerful forces and strong emotions. The House of Education is also somewhat divided, it appears, and other houses on how to proceed on the issue of taxes. The governor has a different tax plan out there than the one you all have. What happens now? Do you go forward? Can you get on board with the governors and set yours aside? What do we do?
Well, first, I think there's a lot that we support. There's a lot of commonality. I think the entire education community, I think the governor, I think much of the legislature believes that we need more funding for public education, and we need to improve the conditions in the communities in which our schools are located. So I think there's a lot of common ground. I think there's also common ground in the sense that we all want to see an initiative be successful. I think right now there's a little bit of jockeying to see which initiative makes the most sense. We obviously support ours. We think ours actually resonates not only with the broad California electorate, but it also resonates with the activists who have been involved in the Occupy movement. We think it's the measure that really is right for the political moment.
But let me ask you, would you set yours aside if the governor came to you and said, get on board with my tax idea?
Well, we've met with the governor. He's never actually made that request of ours. He actually was quite interested in hearing about the details of ours. We're committed to moving ours forward. We think that, you know, at the end of the day, we probably would like to see labor and progressive community come together around one. But we think it should be ours. We think ours polls the best. We think ours makes the most sense for the people of California.
So still to be determined, I guess, is what
exactly.
I hear you saying. Joshua Peschdahl is the president of the California Federation of Teachers. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. And we want to go back down to the floor of the California State Assembly, where State Senator Mimi Walters, a Republican from Orange County, joins us. And Senator Walters, thank you. Senator Walters, can you hear me?
Oh, we don't have Senator Walters. We have Assemblywoman Diane Harkey.
We live less than a mile away from each other, though. My apologies. Bad note on my computer, Assemblymember Diane Harkey, a Republican also from Orange County in the State Assembly. Ms. Harkey, my apologies, and thank you for joining us. We'll get it right
welcome.
From here.
Thank you for having me.
Talk a little bit, if you could, about overall reaction to the speech, and then we'll talk about a couple of topics. But did you hear anything in here you liked?
Well, the speech was vintage Jerry Brown. I happen to be old enough to have remembered him the first time around, and he has improved, but it's vintage Jerry, and he's funny. He adds a little bit of humor, and he makes us laugh. That being said, he's dealing with very, very serious topics, and, digging a financial hole is bad policy, but yet that's what he continues to want to do when he wants to expand things like high-speed rail and other things that will increase the debt. So I understand, where he's going. We can always count on this governor to want more taxes and to blame Republicans, and that's pretty much what he does.
You've been you have been particularly outspoken on the issue of high-speed rail and, of course, your opposition to moving forward with the project. The governor tried to paint the picture today as one of thinking big and hearkening back to the days of California, of building California, Gold Rush era. Then he referenced in other issues, of course, what his father did on infrastructure issues. How is this, or why is this, rather, different?
Well, when his father built infrastructure, he actually had – we had an allocation for that. There was a an actual funding source. The problem with this project is there is no funding source. You basically got $3.9 billion from the Obama administration that is targeted for the Central Valley. The rest will have to come from California. There's no private capital. There's no private capital interested in starting in this area. Now, if Governor Brown would we've heads have rolled over there. We've got a new gentleman in charge, Mr. Richards. And between the peer review, the auditors, the legislative analysts, anyone in transportation has looked at this project understands that it's really not a good beginning. If he wants to use the $3 billion and he's not doesn't want to give that back like other states have done, then he needs to find a way to put it to some productive use that will really work for Californians, not merely sinking $6 billion into 100 miles of track somewhere between Podunk and near Podunk. That's not
in other words, what you're. In other words, what you're saying, Ms. Harkey, is ask the feds to let us redirect that seed money for high-speed rail to some other transportation project.
Definitely, and we should have done that long ago. Now we're up against the clock, but that doesn't mean that you keep adding good money after bad. This was ill thought out. It's a shame. It was a political solution, and it's not working. And anyone, like I said, transportation expert will tell you it doesn't work. And if you try to get private investors, they'll say, we will help build this project if this is what you want. But we want to start where we've got people that will actually ride it because they're interested in making some money. And the reality of the bond measure that was passed by the people, the people were deceived. They were totally deceived. They were deceived on the price. They were deceived on the no subsidy. They were deceived in just about every manner that you can think of. And now the reality is hitting, and people have moved against the project, and rightfully so. But I do believe, I don't think California needs a whole new train network, to be honest. But I do believe we can make improvements on our existing, we can improve connections, and we can do that with the federal dollars that have been allocated for high-speed rail. And then somewhere down the line, when things get rolling and we do it right, private investors will probably come in and want to build a high-speed rail. Right now, they're still talking about the the Anaheim to Las Vegas line, and that's private capital. So where you have people that will ride these things, we'll get private investment. But if you put it out in the middle of between Bakersfield and near Fresno where there's no ridership, you are not going to get private investment. You may never get private investment.
Assemblymember Diane Harkey, Republican from Orange County. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. And while we're moving a new legislator to the line and the down at the floor of the Assembly, Steve Maviglio, I know you have a different viewpoint than Ms. Harkey does on high-speed rail, but what I wanted to ask you briefly is there are Democrats who are skeptical of moving forward on high-speed rail. The governor has to convince them as well, because what people may not understand, the legislature has to act this year to make the first appropriation of that bond money. And there are Democrats who are skeptical.
Yeah, and the governor, to his credit, is just shaking up the High-Speed Rail Authority with naming a new commissioner. There's going to be a new executive director. They've rerouted some of the controversial parts. Despite Ms. Harkey's comments about a part of our state where suffering 25% employment, that's where you get the most track for the dollar, and that's why they want to start the train there.
Let's go back down to the floor of the State Assembly, and I believe now we do have State Senator Mimi Walters, Republican from Orange County. Ms. Walters, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Thank you very much for joining us. Give us some thoughts, first of all, just a brief overview. What did you find out of the speech interesting, whether you liked it or didn't like it, but what was noteworthy?
Well, when the governor said, how can California be the land of dreams, he's only provides images and blueprints for reform. As we have seen with the pensions, we never see language and the leadership in the movement towards real reform. And if we truly want to get the state of California back on track, it's not going to take increasing taxes. It's going to take substantial reform, and that's what's missing.
One issue that I know you have a lot of interest in, the governor talked about, is public employee pensions. Governor offered some defense of his plan, but also said do something substantive, I believe, paraphrasing him here. What do you think? I mean, you know, I know you would like the governor to go further than he is, but he's going further than some Democrats want. Where do you think that issue stands?
Well, I'm optimistic in terms of the governor addressing pension reform, but again, we have to have the details on what the reform is going to be. I'm concerned that the legislature will not put forward meaningful pension reform. And if we don't have meaningful pension reform, then our fiscal house in Sacramento is in jeopardy, and people who currently have pensions and who are relying on pensions in the future are in jeopardy of losing them.
Do you think, though, Senator Walters, that there is room for compromise on this issue and other issues? I mean, if the governor says, let's make this particular proposal, the 12-point plan, which is dealing really with future workers mainly, would Republicans say that's a good start? Let's go there at least if we can't do something else?
I believe the Republicans do support his 12-point plan in theory. But again, as I mentioned, you have to see the details. And until we see the actual details, we're not really sure what he is proposing. And quite frankly, I think he's going to have a difficult time with the Democrat legislators in putting forward meaningful pension reform because of the special interest power in Sacramento.
And Senator Walters, before I let you go, just one final question on a larger issue on the budget and taxes. The governor is making his case for why we need additional taxes to solve the problems with government funding for schools, funding for other things. Tell me, is there any middle ground on the issue of taxes, or you just fundamentally believe we don't need them?
The last thing we need to do is ask people in the state of California to pay more in taxes. You have people who are losing their jobs, they're losing their homes, and having a difficult time putting food on the table. The way that we are going to reform the state of California and increase revenue for our budget is by putting people back to work in the private sector, by creating private sector jobs. That's how we will increase revenues, by taxing people. We're sending the wrong message to the people in the state of California.
State Senator Mimi Walters, a Republican from Orange County, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
And Steve Maviglio, Democratic political strategist, coming back in here. Clearly, you and Ms. Walters and Ms. Harkey would probably see things very differently there. But as we know, Californians have historically reticent to increase their taxes. The polling that we have seen so far suggests that the governor has a better shot this time than others. But again, you continue to hear people say that we haven't done enough to reform government, make it more efficient, more wise use of taxpayer dollars. That's part of what the governor's going to have to address when he goes out on the stump.
Yeah, and I think Jerry Brown has made some of those major slashing attempts in the state budget, and also in many of the programs have been scaled back to work better. You heard him talk about education today. He wants to make the system work better. Didn't say much about adding more money. And I think that's the big difference. Now, the Republicans, though, they have this robotic line about taxes and revenue, and they use it every year in good times and bad, and that's fine. But, they have proved over and over again they're not part of the solution here in Sacramento. So when they say, we want to see the details, they never give them to us, and that's one of the big frustrations of Democrats.
Talk just really quickly, too, about where we go from here. As we said, Governor Brown, now that the State of the State speech is over, he heads to Southern California. Four events over the next 2 days, L.A., Orange County, San Diego. Orange County, we'll see what kind of reception he gets down in Republican territory. But the governor hasn't spent a lot of time doing the public handshaking, stumping thing in recent years, I would argue. This is going to be a relatively new thing for him in recent political years. Is it going to be a hard pivot for him, you think? I mean, he's an inside guy who likes to work the inside game. This is a bigger game.
Yeah, and one of the big criticisms of Democrats is he has not been out there on the stump rallying the troops. And frankly, it's hard to get Democrats enthusiastic when you're cutting every program that's sacred to them to do something. So, we need to see him out on the stages across the state, not in terms of what Arnold Schwarzenegger did when that was all he did, but, he can have that nice blend of the inside and outside game. And I think we'll be seeing a lot more Jerry Brown in locations near you in the next few months.
And do you think we're able to rally, or is he able to kind of rally the troops, I think, in a way in terms of, you heard Joshua Peschtold here earlier talking about taxes. He's got to get some alignment on the issue about initiatives. Are you one of those who believes that you can only have one tax increase initiative on the ballot because otherwise the voters will reject them all? They'll just be, confused or frustrated?
No, I give voters a little more credit than that. I think they're able to sort the good from the bad. But, there's so much stuff that might be on the ballot this year. The ballot pamphlet might look like Encyclopedia Britannica, if anybody remembers what that looked like, because there's so many interests that want to put something out there and bypass the legislature.
And but having said that, the governor now has a task of still convincing some of those. As we said, Joshua Peschtold, California Federation of Teachers, has a millionaire's tax. There are others. They don't seem to be – they think theirs is the right one. And you are going after a similar group of people, are you not? Tax the rich, and so forth.
Right. And I think, though, some of the cards and dominoes are falling. We saw the Think Long Committee, which was proposing a number of significant government reforms and taxes that they said they're going to stay off the ballot. I know there's one on clean energy that might go by the wayside if, the right cards are played. So, there's a shakedown period now. But watch out when next time you go to Target, because there's going to be somebody with about 15 clipboards trying to tackle you as you get inside.
The petition gatherers will be out in full force in 2012 trying to get a number of issues on the ballot. Final thoughts here as we wrap up. Again, this was a quintessential Jerry Brown speech. I think we have said that earlier. It was at times detailed. It was at times feisty, telling people to kind of, get over their small-mindedness of where California is. Got to dig in at Texas. I mean, everybody likes that in the battle of which state is better to be in. Some people have said that these are times that suit Jerry Brown well. That given the complexity and the bad choices out there, that Jerry Brown is probably the guy who can do that. He's not he finds a way to kind of just tell it like it is.
Yeah, and it's such a difference from Schwarzenegger, which was all pomp and circumstance and a roadshow and this and that. But Jerry Brown is giving it to us like medicine.
That's Steve Maviglio, a Democratic strategist, and joining us here for the hour for the speech. You can hear more analysis, of course, of the governor's speech tomorrow morning on the California Report, carried on most of these stations. You have been listening to a special broadcast of the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our guests this morning have included Steve Maviglio, Democratic strategist, Marisa Lagos, political reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, State Senator Mimi Walters, a Republican from Orange County, State Assemblymember Diane Harkey, Republican from Orange County, and Joshua Peschtold, the president of the California Federation of Teachers. Our director is Susie Racho. The engineer is Paul Lancour. Danny Bringer has been our engineer in Sacramento. Coverage of the governor's State of the State address was produced by Polly Stryker. Our engineering team includes Dan Mansard, Larry Wood, and Monte Carlos. And we had production assistance from Thomas Gordon and Nicole Wynn. Ingrid Becker is the senior producer. The executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm John Myers. Thanks for listening. You're listening to the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995, and the members of KQED Public Radio.